First up, I'll just allow each of our panelists to introduce themselves. Christine, have at it.
Great. Welcome. As John said, my name is Christine Elliott, and I lead content strategy and communications globally for JLL. And I'm relatively new to the organization as of last May. So if you're not aware, JLL is a global real estate investment and management company, very, very, very large. With lots of challenges. And we help clients find, buy, lease, design, and deliver spaces. And when you think about what I just said, I did not say anything about real estate. And our industry, like every other one, is in a huge transition. With the need to attract and retain talent, real estate as a function is really being elevated, and it's becoming increasingly a C-suite conversation, which frankly we are not necessarily prepared for. It's a new change. In addition to that, being a very, very large player in the market, our sales teams are used to responding to RFPs. If there's an RFP, we get it. And so there's a huge change that we need to impose on helping our sellers really learn how to sell and how to start from the perspective of a client. So we are very, very excited. We went through a marketing transformation about a year ago, and as part of that, stood up several different new competencies and functions, sales enablement being one of them. So marketing felt so strongly about sales enablement that we agreed to stand it up with or without sales, not in a controversial way, but along that journey, sales really took hold. And so the slide on the left there, our new global sales enablement leader, this is how he is framing the initiatives for our global function. At the same time, from a marketing perspective, we are standing up Seismic as a sales enablement platform. So we are at the really, really early stages, but it is really exciting.
Excellent. Thank you. Ellie?
All right. Hi, everyone. I'm Ellie Merman. I'm the CMO at Crayon. That means I lead the marketing team. We are a lean team. So the company is about 70 or so people altogether. Marketing's about 4 today. So you can imagine we're all somewhat involved with sales enablement. We've got someone in product marketing. We've got someone in demand gen, someone in content, and myself. The company is a market and competitive intelligence software platform. So we give you insight into everything that's happening in your market so that you can drive marketing and sales and product initiatives. Our sales team is all inside sales. We have our sales teams are aligned by persona. We take personas very seriously at our company. And we have a few different sales teams that roughly also align with size of business. So we generally sell to the mid-market and enterprise. It's all inside sales, though, based in Boston. And we work and sit very closely with the sales team. Up here, you can see just a sampling of some of the things that we've done, right? We're a startup growing fast, but that means that we're squeezing in different sales enablement programs whenever we can. So just a variety of case studies and collateral and such, battle cards, of course. Because we're a competitive intelligence platform, we use our own product for our sales team as well. And so we're looking, we've integrated already our sales enablement programs into Salesforce, which is our CRM, and also launching integrations with other sales enablement platforms like Seismic, actually.
Excellent. Just curious, how many of you, like Ellie, are asked to do a lot with a little? Yeah, it seems to be the trend, right? Mm-hmm. So, excellent. Thank you. And Carla?
Hi, I'm Carla Fitzgerald. I'm the CMO at Spirion, not Experian, which is what everyone thinks I'm saying, but Spirion, which is a vehicle telematics company. We have two sides to our business where we're extracting data from vehicles and from driver behavior, and it's feeding either our fleet and transportation business. You can think of large companies like Ryder, you might see Swift trailers on the road, et cetera. Those are customers of ours, and they have tens of thousands of assets that we track through telematics. And then we also have an automotive side of our business, which is primarily auto dealerships, everything from the largest dealer groups in the country down to little small gravel lot dealers in neighborhoods all over the country. And so our business is as a marketing organization is to partner with sales to serve both, you know, the large enterprise accounts all the way down to small SMB, which is a bit challenging, trying to have strategies that can be adapted to both. What you see here is an example of a recent campaign and product launch that we did with our franchise dealer automotive sales team. In the franchise dealer business, I don't know how many of you know people, have ever been in the franchise dealer space, but it's a very relationship-driven industry. There are a thing called top 20 dealer groups, and they're all across the country, and that's where the GMs, principals, chief executives for all of these franchise dealer groups, they'll come together, they'll exchange strategies, et cetera. And so trying to break through some of these dealer groups is really the key for us in terms of getting penetration of our solutions throughout 20, 30, 40, 50 stores. And those stores can equal another 20, 30, 40 rooftops where vehicles are being sold. So in this example, we were launching a new product. We wanted to be able to combine a call campaign with our LDR team that in our company reports up under sales. There's a lot of benefits to that. Happy to explain later if you're interested. With our targeted account sales team, where they picked the top 50 prospects in each of their regions, and we combined that with a direct mail leading up to the largest industry event in the country for the franchise dealership called NADA, National Auto Dealers Association meeting. And it was a great integrated approach, working really closely with sales to launch a new product. You do a lot of teaser marketing up front, do a lot of personalized mailing where we had the letter come from the LDRs by their personal name, requesting meetings with their specific strategic account managers for meetings on site and those types of things. So very personalized, very customized, and got a lot of attention. And so this is the type of thing we want to do continuously in the segment because it is such a relationship-based sale.
Excellent. Very good. So one of the things that, you know, sort of a theme, and we talked about this in another session yesterday, is the tools that we all use. I mean, everybody gets hit from the salespeople, right? Buy this, buy that, and so on. So, Christine, I'm curious. You said you're just in the early stages now of implementing Seismic. It's a pretty yes. well-known sales enablement tool. Just wondering, you know, kind of if you want to share some insights, any kind of learnings that you've had on that process of bringing that in. And you know, there's obviously a training aspect and it's very, you know, the content piece. So just maybe some insights and things that you've learned.
Sure. So the decision to go with Seismic was made before I came to the firm. So I kind of came in after those initial stages of selecting. But one of the things that we did in preparation for launching is we did a global content audit. And so, which if you haven't done one, it is not the funnest project ever, but it really, really, really can help. So we audited over 1,000 pieces of content. You know, we don't know what works with sales yet, but we wanted to clean up our house. So we intend to use Seismic as our content repository. And one of the things that's important for us as our industry is changing is we have this brilliant research insights engine called the Future of Work. So everything's in transition, but we have this tremendous research around digital drive and human experience, all of the things that are not traditional core real estate things that we need to educate our sellers on. So we tagged all of the content post-audit with dimensions of the Future of Work so that we can serve up content where people have said, you know, Future of Work is great, but it's way up here. How does it connect to our services? Through the content audit and then the tagging within Seismic, we're going to try really hard to close that gap.
Excellent. That's great. I mean, it's hard. You know, implementing tools alone is difficult usually, so it takes a good plan, a good process.
And integrations and, you know, yeah. the whole discussion about what's good enough to launch, you know, because you only get one chance to make a first impression. And so we're really trying to balance out how good does the integration have to be with CRM to start? Mm-hmm. What are those kind of minimum viable things so that we can set ourselves up for success? But we are right now in our innovators launch. So we have about 40 people globally testing out the system.
Yeah, that's actually a really great point is, you know, so many companies want to either get it perfect before they launch it, and instead of, you know, taking it at its most basic, launch it and then begin to layer things on. You know, that really does drive adoption. So it sounds like a great approach, a great strategy. Ellie, your team is working with content, provide, you know, obviously useful content. What are the things that you've struggled with? Mm-hmm. I know you shared some of those things, you know, with regards to, I think it was sales creating their own content and trying to keep that under control. And I'm just wondering, you know, some insights on how you've been able to work through that and you know, get closer with them and kind of coordinate a little bit more.
Yeah, I think oftentimes if you're in a situation, well, first off, I'm sure all of our salespeople are creating content on their own and going rogue. Comes with the territory. And I actually think it's a reflection of something good, right? It's a reflection that they're taking initiative. It's that they have an understanding of what the prospect wants, and they're trying to piece together something themselves. Of course, what they're creating is not exactly what you would want necessarily. And so what I've definitely learned is to try to swim with the current. Right. So if the rep is already creating this content, all right, tell me about this content. What was the situation that led to you creating this? What are you trying to solve for? Let me see how I can build on it. And then ultimately try to get to a place where you have a piece of content that you can roll out to the entire team. And it carries so much more weight, I think, when it comes from a salesperson, even if it's gone through a lot of iterations through marketing after the fact. I think there's it carries a lot more credibility when it's, you know, top rep over here came up with this idea and we've just, you know, brought it to the rest of the team. You can replicate their success by adopting this. And so we've tried to do that quite a bit. It's definitely a process to actually find out what is happening out in the world. We recently rolled out, just speaking of more product rollouts with sales, recently rolled out outreach for all the email tracking and templates and so on. One of the reasons being we wanted to get more visibility into what they were sending. Even if we got a little bit of pushback early on about using the templates that we created for them. So we said, all right, you know, send what you're going to send, but send it through outreach so that we can see and gather data and understand what's working. And then, again, we can swim with the current and then roll out the best practices to the team.
Yeah, that's great. That's, you know, again, if, you know, we're all, I think a lot of us have been asked to implement, maybe you're in the middle of implementing account-based strategies. Just, again, out of curiosity, how many folks have gone that route and still also have traditional demand gen rolling? Kind of quick show of hands. It's pretty common, but you know, as you get deeper and deeper into the account-based strategies, that coordination and that ability to leverage that content and deliver it, you know, and have other team members use it and potentially, you know, take from that piece and create additional pieces. That's really important and good to have as far as working with sales and making them happy. Because
yep.
Everybody always wants to do what the top producer is doing, right? Mm-hmm. They always are asking for that. So, and then personas is also very important for you. Carla, as you're approaching, you know, content and especially as it relates to aligning content with the buyer stages, I know I've worked with a lot of clients who really struggle with that. You and I, we sort of talked a little bit about your use of lead and account scoring. And I'm just curious, you know, on your approach with that, if you've been able to sort of put that to good use, meaning actually use the account scoring to say, this person is probably at this buyer stage. And just, again, any learnings that you've had on that and being able to align content, not only to the person, but the stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are... back office is a Salesforce and HubSpot. And so before HubSpot, we had Marketo. And one of our big challenges in 2018 was that migration and lead scoring was a big consideration of that because we had scoring built up in Marketo. And it was rather a complex formula that had been set up, which I inherited when I came to the company a couple of years ago. And we debated a lot whether or not we would try to carry over the scores to HubSpot when we migrated or start from zero. We decided to start from zero. And in doing so, I'm glad that we did because it gave us a lot better insight into the programs that we were going to be implementing, which ones were having traction versus if we had carried over some scores, I think there would have been kind of the false positives of passing that hurdle to be handed over to sales when we really didn't know that much yet about our segments. So much changes, as you come on board in a new company and you're evolving your programs and those types of things. But what we found is that our thought leader programs were actually being targeted by the people who were higher in the buyer journey, just as you would expect, right? So we developed webinar series using third party experts and created outreach through third parties to pull people who were early in their education phase of their buying journey. And just as you would expect, those are the people that were signing up and attending because as we followed up with them, they wouldn't respond to anything else. They wouldn't respond to requests for demo. They wouldn't respond to, click here for a free pilot. So when they were attending our thought leader webinars and things, there was this period of time before they'd score again. And so we started to see that. And so it's okay, clearly these thought leaders are for early stage buyers. And as we looked at other types of campaigns that were focused on things like ROI model, click here, it was exactly what you'd expect, right? They're further down the buying cycle. They're trying to think about, can I justify this behavior? And so we started to adjust our scoring model as well and the status of leads in Salesforce based on what people were getting to. Because as you can imagine, sometimes you get a prospect that goes straight to the ROI model. They didn't come in at the top of their buying funnel. Right. They came in wherever they came in. And so we started to see those patterns and be able to say, okay, if we're getting them for the first time on ROI model, on interested in pilot or whatever, super hot, we have to catch up quick. The assumption was they're probably already looking at competitors. The bar has already been set by someone else. Mm-hmm. Right, as opposed to us setting the bar through the thought leader stuff at the top. So we created a campaign around that or an MO around that, understanding if it's the first time we see them at those late stage cycles, we're going to react differently. The LDR team and the account team are going to react differently. We're going to get very aggressive with competitive comparisons as follow-up, things like that, offering promotional types of offers, recognizing that they're probably later in the buying stage. So it's not super sophisticated yet, but it's the types of things that we were able to see by virtue of the pain of migrating from a marketing automation system to another gave us some insights that I think would have been a little bit lost had we tried to integrate all of the lead scoring from Marketo into HubSpot.
Yeah, it's a really a great point. So many of us have these really complicated lead scoring models. And what eventually happens is we don't use them. I've come across a lot of that. And you sort of want to hold on to it, but don't be afraid to throw it out and start over again and really start with the basics. And again, think about what those scores, what those points of engagement really means. I mean, is a visit to a landing page really worth that much? Aren't you really looking for them to do something more than that? Is a click of a link in an email really that much? Is it really showing that they're engaged? To your point, buyers are coming in all parts of the cycle. So you could have a buyer that was completely educated by your competitor, mm-hmm. and you being able to identify them and confirm that you've identified them in the right place, I think is really important. And utilizing the tools in a simplistic way, I think is another very good approach. So continuing on, you also mentioned some interesting tools that you guys use. One that stood out to me was your use of Tech Validate. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who don't know, I'll let her explain, but it's something that I think is way overlooked with a lot of marketing teams.
Yeah, particularly when everybody knows that for enterprise sales, they're looking for a lot of validation and case studies of like large customers. They need to know that they can count on you to serve that size of business. You have all the resources, et cetera. But in SMB, what we feel is that there's a lot more interest to know that the guy down the street is using it. Not just somebody somewhere, but like in my area, in my industry, if you're a plumber, you want to know that plumbers in your area use something new, especially if you're going to change the way you do your business. So it's impossible for us as a centralized small marketing organization to try to come up with all of the references ourselves and work with sales to try to gather all of that. So what we did is we invested in Tech Validate, and really it's a survey tool, but it's managed as a third party under, they're owned by SurveyMonkey, and they work with us to formulate surveys that talk about the value of solving the problem first. So, you know, how important is fuel savings to a small fleet manager that has 10 or 15 trucks? How expensive is idling, excess idling? What does it mean to your customer if you're late for a delivery? And then depending on the industry, if you're delivering goods, frozen goods, perishables, it means a lot more than if you're delivering, you know, electronics. So they conduct surveys to our customer base. We supply the list. They conduct surveys. The result of the surveys are customer testimonials, quotes, stats about savings, basically packaged value-based web materials that now our sales team can go in and look at and pick and sort through, looking for somebody who's in the plumbing industry to grab that, throw it on their email and send it out on their template to other plumbers that they're reaching out for, or other landscapers or utility companies or whatever the case is. So it's really allowed us to not only generate bite-size endorsements for the value of that our solution is bringing to the table, but it also gives us a source. As the larger those customers get, they check mark on those surveys whether they're willing to do press releases, webinars, video testimonials, and all that. So it gives us even a target list of people to go after to say, hey, we're hosting a webinar. Would you like to speak? Hey, we have this press release about this new product feature. Would you like to give us a quote? So it's just been something really appreciated by the sales team, that this is ongoing library of endorsements. And then for us, it gives us a target list of people to go after for more meaty marketing endorsements that we would like to have.
And I imagine it also lets you be really nimble, mm-hmm. right? And get them done quickly. Mm-hmm. And especially today, in you know, nowadays in Twitter world, if we are, you know, we're expecting things quickly. So when the market changes and there's a news story about how fuel prices are going to be going up, that's a very timely topic. Mm-hmm. And those small exactly. business owners who are directly impacted by a 20-cent increase in fuel or whatever that looks like, they want to know pretty much right away. So you can spin something up like that on a very targeted or focused topic and leverage the tool and the power of the tool just to get something simple out there and enable sales to say, hey, this person is like, they're on the fence. And if you deliver that, you know, right at the moment that they're ready to make the decision or trying to make the decision, that might be a really useful thing to do. From a technology standpoint, you know, we talked again a little bit about your audience, your account-based, you know, strategies and the different things. What tools are you using for account-based that have worked or, you know, help you get closer to sales or, you know, manage that relationship and work in coordination with them a little bit more? Mm. Any that stand out?
Yeah, so in terms of working closely with sales, I have appreciated the most things that are offline. So aside from technology and whatnot, I find, especially with salespeople who are people, right? They like communicating with people. Yeah. And so, yes, you know, in some past roles, I've done surveys and things like that to the sales team. And when you get to a certain size, you probably need to incorporate that anyhow. But the one-on-one interaction is so important. And so, you know, every week we have a SMARketing meeting where sales marketing leadership gets together. We talk about the things. It's a pretty tactical meeting. So we start off with the key results to date, and we share a lot of goals. So it's a great kind of reminder of alignment and how we're working towards the same things. And then we also have quite a few the sales team has quite a few trainings that we participate in, and we have different marketers that will go to those trainings depending on the topic, right? So our product marketer might go and lead a training on something. Our demand gen marketer might go and give an update on certain campaigns. So it's a good opportunity to just get more face time with literally everyone in marketing. And then we physically sit with the sales team. So none of the marketers actually sit next to each other because there are a lot more salespeople than marketers. And so we're all kind of sprinkled throughout, and it's been fantastic. And we actually switch seats every few months, largely because we're just constantly reshuffling and getting more office space. But it is really helpful because you build relationships with the people who sit literally side by side, and you get great direct feedback. You get to see how their day goes. You get to ask questions when they get off a call and they look really frustrated, or you get to high five them after they, you know, close a deal. And it creates this great camaraderie, and it gets more informal feedback, because when you ask a question to a salesperson, I think the answer that you get is based on the last call they just got off. And if you're only doing that once a month, once a quarter, you're getting a really bizarre sample of what's happening. And so if you're actually in the pit with them, you can get more of that regular feedback on an ongoing basis in just bite-sized pieces. And that helps a lot in terms of informing the things that we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, if for those of you that was here, that were here in the previous presentation, Shahid shared some of that, you know, alignment and being able to get together and talk about the common goals. Such an important part of marketing, you know, sales and marketing alignment. You know, we're all people. And at the end of the day, if we're working together, we all understand our common goals. We all know that sales is driven by the size of their wallet. And marketing isn't necessarily tied to that, although in some cases we're beginning to be tied to that. But if we talk about it and we recognize it, and we all know that we're working towards those common goals, we're all working towards revenue for the company. That helps everybody. Sales and commissions, marketing and bonuses, CEO's happy, everyone's happy. So those meetings are super important for alignment and good ways to approach. Again, especially in this account-based world where we're going to be doing coordinated programs, and got to get to know who you're working with, especially if you start aligning yourselves to teams. So you mentioned something about training. So I'll ask Christine, we were again talking a little bit about some of the different things. I think that the statement that you made is that you've got making sure that all customer-facing staff, I think as you put it, were skilled at the services, tools, and process. Such an important part of it, you know, making sure that the team is enabled. How have you guys approached training? Is it something that you do ongoing? Do you develop training materials? You know, short videos, this is how you do things. I mean, simple stuff or maybe even more complex stuff. So,
well, again, we're very, very early in our journey. Mm-hmm. So what's been really cool about uploading content into Seismic is that we've been able to create some enablement materials. Like our Future of Work platform is a huge research initiative that we just finished. And I refuse to publish a research report on our website because there's so much great insight locked in there. So we're taking a really dramatically different approach, but we recognize that the business needs that information and needs to be able to present it to clients. So we did create a PowerPoint presentation that could be used. So there's a ton of speaker notes. So when we loaded it into Seismic, it was really important to separate out the speaker notes because we know sales will just forward it to a client instead of having a conversation. So by stripping some of that out but adding it there, I think it's really going to help us in terms of, you know, how to sort of model the behavior. And again, our sales folks are used to responding to RFPs. So one of the other things that we undertook in marketing was to create what we call the CS storyline. So baseline presentations on how do you talk about, you know, we have this great research platform, start with 10 trends and ask someone what resonates with you versus you're going in to sell them facilities management services. And what's going to be really neat with Seismic is as we see how the sales teams are interacting with the storyline, because marketing created it, not in a vacuum, but, you know, put our kind of best foot forward. The workspace functionality within Seismic will allow sellers to collaborate with each other. And I think we're going to get some great metrics on how they are actually using that information and what adjustments they're making. So, but it's our new sales enablement global leader. I mean, it's all about the training. It is all about the training. Just, you know, doing it and, you know, handing it over is not going to help us achieve our goals.
Well, and you also talked about sort of that shift from a sales perspective away from RFPs and focusing more and being able to educate your team on pain points, helping identify pain points. I think you said that you are employing or deploying Miller Hyman. yes. to help solve that. So, yep. you know, again, think outside the box. It doesn't always have to necessarily be a technology. It can be a process. Process is so critically important nowadays. And for those of you in the room that are in ops, it's big time important. I know in your particular case, from a data and KPI measurement standpoint, I think you shared that you have 6 instances of Eloqua with Microsoft Dynamics. For those of you knowing tech, that's big. You know, that's a lot of data to be able to crunch down. So the training and the ability for everyone to know sort of what they're doing is super important. I'm curious about each of your takes on content trends. What you think is, you know, coming, what you're seeing that's working well, maybe not working well. There's lots of stuff that we can do out there as marketers, but maybe just each of you take a few minutes and share what you're seeing and start with you again, Christine.
Sure. Yeah. That's a great question. You know, we've been talking for years about the importance of creating content experiences and allowing people to guide their own journey. And I think we still have a really long way to go with that. First of all, you have to have a ton of content to serve up an experience where they can click through and choose it. So that's one of the biggest challenges. And I think shorter is better. I think that bite-sized content is just, I think it's unrealistic to potentially think somebody's going to read a 12-page white paper. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But I think we're in a moment where interactive, quick, focused, and creating that, if you're consuming this piece of content, how do you make a connection to what the next piece is based on what you know about your buyers? So we're implementing new lead nurture strategies where each piece of content that we're going to deliver has a very specific call to action that takes them through the journey. Yeah. Now, they can choose to do it a different way, but I think that's really important as well. And one of the things we learned in our content audit is we are very short on mid-stage content. We have a ton of case studies, which is awesome to have, and we've got great thought leadership. But if somebody already knows they have an issue, they do not want to read more content about that issue. So I see a big opportunity there on that mid-stage content that takes the perspective of, here's high level how you would go about solving that issue.
Sure.
I also think there's a lot to do in late-stage content. Case studies don't do it. You know, how do you justify the investment? How what is your exact solution? And that's what we're kind of trying to draw out. It's not a product profile, but we have to do a better job of saying what our exact solution is so people can understand it.
So some good points. Ellie?
So I think there are definitely some trends overall, you know, just based on timing and the world that we live in now. But I will also say that it really differs from business to business. So for one, I mean, case studies are a classic one where case studies feel like they're always really important. And how could you not have case studies? It validates the success that you've had for other similar customers. But I've also been in companies where we created case studies and it was more of a checkbox. Like, oh yeah, we've got that. But nobody actually read it, right? Sales would send it out. Sales would love them. But they would send it out and never get clicked on, never get read, because it's like, all right, sure, you have that. Because I think it's still, in that scenario, those potential customers were going elsewhere for that type of validation. They were looking on review sites or they were, you know, Googling you and seeing what came up. And so I think what I've always tried to do at a new company, and I'm kind of a serial startup person, so I'm usually starting from scratch, although I think a lot of us are working in new teams and whatnot that have a similar dynamic. Is just to build a couple of pieces and then see what ends up taking off, right? Given the trends, sure the understanding of your industry, you know, what is actually going to pan out for your exact scenario, I think is hard to predict. And so literally just putting out a couple of pieces and seeing what happens, I think can be one of the best ways to drive that. I agree on the short and sweet content. I think that is huge. I think multiple types of media can really change the game because you have people who just want to consume things in different ways. Like, I actually really don't like watching videos, even though video is one of the biggest trends now. It's just, I always have the sound off of my computer. The only videos I'm going to watch are the ones that have words, you know, the subtitles or just captions throughout the whole thing. So I think that you need to optimize for those different types of buyers, even if within your persona base. I think different kinds of media can help you make sure that you're reaching everybody.
Yeah, you bring up a great transition.
Because
what I'm going to tell you about automotive and small businesses that are out in the field, fleet managers that are out in the field with their trucks going around all over town, is video. Mm. Video, 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 video. They don't read. If you think salespeople have ADD, try an auto dealer. Yep. They don't read. Mm-hmm. And so we've had the most success in terms of, you know, clicked content and call to action on your basic explainer videos, right? A day in the life. We have a day in the life series for all of our persona segments. We have customer case studies on video that are a minute, you know, 90 seconds is a long one, you know. We have our experts, our SMEs in the office answering a question on video. So not, you know, the 45 minute watch this and learn everything there is to know, but you know, here's one topical question. So bite-size videos, our salespeople love them because they can send them out. And again, salespeople, they don't want to read either, right? So if they can get information by watching something in 2 minutes, they're super happy as well. One of the things that we have also been doing all year long, which has helped our marketing department to create new snackable content, is anytime we do a media briefing, analyst or journalist media briefing, it's with our SMEs and myself, maybe other executives at the company, we record and transcribe everything because those are the stories that come out that are very hard to capture when you send an email to the product manager saying, could you give me some key points for this upcoming, you know, whatever infographic we want to produce or this upcoming, you know, white paper we're working on? Can you send me bullet points or send me, you know, they, when you ask them on email, their frame of mind is like, A, you're bothering me. So how fast can I get this off of my plate? But when they're presenting to Gartner Group or to whatever analyst or journalist, they're now thinking, I'm here to impress you. So their frame of mind is different. They're describing stories and they're answering questions. Well, you know, tell me about some customers who are doing that. So they're explaining about that. We record all that, we transcribe it, and our content manager and our demand gen team uses those transcriptions to extract stories, extract examples, extract facts that I will always forget, right? You know, oh, well, you know, we learned that 27% of small blah, 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 blah. And everyone's like, write that down. Oh, it's transcribed, right? So that's just another way to create bite-sized content. So video and then snack size, a piece of an infographic, not even a whole infographic, right? A few factoids.
I will also say that video has been one of the most requested forms of internal content that we've gotten. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we do a lot of in-person trainings for the sales team. We also do plenty of collateral and emails and all that. But a lot of our reps are more... One of our reps literally asked us to record someone just doing we've like updated our boilerplate and just like the high level elevator pitch, mm-hmm. just hearing that over and mm-hmm. over and over again, just on his commute, just wanted an audio file that he could listen to over and over again. It's like, mm-hmm. Great, sure. It'll just get ingrained in their brains. So there's a desire even internally for a variety of different types of media to consume new materials, new messaging, all that.
And you know, there's so many great things that you guys just shared, but a couple that stand out to me, you know, the ability to be able to know down to the individual, and maybe you do it by title or role or whatever, what type of content, what channel they prefer to be in. You know, email's dying. We all know it. Unfortunately, a lot of us still continue to use it, but start branching out, invest in video, invest in that ability to have an on-site video editor. They can take the video and turn it into something different that might speak to a person in the channel that they're looking to speak in and get them to engage. The other thing that I see a lot of, and you mentioned day in a life, that's such a powerful tool because people want to know that you understand their problems. They're coming to you with problems. Sometimes they don't even know they have the problems and they read your white paper or the beginning of the white paper and they go, oh yeah, I got that problem. And then they want to learn more. And then the last thing I'll say is if you're producing content, stop talking about your company. Talk about the issue. By talking about the issue and identifying the issue and taking them on a journey about educating them on the issue and the solution, you become the expert. You don't even have to tell them who you're with. They'll know. So those are some things that I've seen that have actually really worked out there. And maybe we'll help you guys, you know, as you begin to take some of this information back and share it with your team. So we've got a couple of minutes. I wanted to give some folks time for questions. Anyone? Yes, sir.
Well, I will say that since we are still so early in our journey, through our innovators launch and just the calls to talk about, hey, you're part of this test group, it's really like I sat on one of the calls and this one rep kept asking question after question. And I talked to Jesse, who's here today, our sales content manager, and said, find out who that person is. Let the people who are really excited about it, let's find out. Because, you know, to think you're going to have an impact on the whole sales force, you don't need to. And it would be so much more powerful coming from them. So we're really looking for those people who recognize that this could help them. And then let's focus on them. And I hope and believe that we'll be more successful than just guessing.
We're doing a version of that, just basically internal champions, trying to get excitement and buy-in from a couple of folks on the team who are very well respected because they're top performers. Everybody goes to them. They try to mirror what that person's doing. So if you can get them on board trialing it or what have you, then that goes a long way in the meeting. So it's not just, oh, marketers coming in here, you know, putting this on the sales team. It's, oh, no, this person is already vouching for it. Mm-hmm. That goes a long way. There was certainly repetition helps, but of course, data is another big factor for me. I've also worked in very data-driven companies, so I think this would translate beyond data-driven companies as well. But I think salespeople are so in the weeds of that one-to-one conversation, they don't necessarily see trends in their own behavior across all of their accounts. And so something that we've done, whether it's with a new tool or rolling out and showing kind of the measurable impact it can have, or even, you know, sharing win rates and some of the patterns around loss reasons and so on, sharing that back with the sales team, more so just to deliver the data, right? Because a lot of times we've done that, say, in small group sessions of smaller sales groups where we give, you know, loss trends across a group of five reps, and then they discuss with each other some of their own best practices with each other. And so it's more about you enabling them to make their decisions, but with a piece of data that they wouldn't have otherwise had. And so I think that that goes a long way because they appreciate it. You're giving them new information, but they're still in the driver's seat.
Probably have anything to add?
Agree with everything you both said. That's our experience as well. I'll say there's two things that we're also doing to try to drive adoption of not only the tools or things that we're rolling out, but where we need their support, right? In terms of anything marketing is trying to do that needs that sales involvement to be successful. So one thing is just the discipline of saying, this is the only way you can get it. So for example, when we rolled out our content management platform for them, which became our sales portal, everyone was in the previous habit of emailing somebody for something. Oh, do you have that last corporate deck? Or I saw this white paper. Do you have it? And, you know, we just were like, oh, let me be of service. Email, email, email. And when we rolled this tool out, we said, no more. If they want it, it's on the portal. Send them the link to the portal. And you can link to, you know, the specific asset, right? But it was drive to the portal, drive to the portal, drive to the portal always. And it took a discipline of everyone in marketing to do that because we were just used to, right? And people are just used to going, here you go, here you go, here. So we all had to go, okay, I will take the time to go to the portal, find it myself, send them the link to just make sure that they know that's where your lifeblood is for content. Go to the portal. So that was just a little bit of, you know, hard line. But I would also say we bribe them. Right? They're coin operated. Mm-hmm. They're coin operated. And so when we want to roll out something new, a new process, a new program, but we're looking for testimonials of a certain type, a certain kind of marquee customer, we bribe them. And I have marketing budget allocated to sales bribes, and we make it time-based. I do. I'm not kidding. And I'm... Yeah, I do.
That's awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How do you bribe them? What do you bribe them with?
A big money chunk of cash because that's what they care about. So, yeah, for example, We were looking for some testimonials for a particular vertical mm-hmm. industry in a particular geo. So I wanted a particular type, and we couldn't get anyone to go on board. And so we did a contest, and we always make it time-based, and it's top three, because you don't want them to give up if mm-hmm. one person won yep. the prize. So the first person to deliver the testimonial we wanted would get $1,000. The next person would get $750. The next person would get $500.
Wow. Not cheap either.
Not cheap, because, right, who doesn't do something for $1,000, right? But again, we didn't want to go, woo, you know, Joe got the $1,000, and everyone go, oh, forget it, I'm not going to try anymore. It's like, there's still a little bit more cash in that kitty, let's go get it, right? So they won't respond. They're just like, I talk about, they're like supermodels. They're like, I don't get out of bed for less than, you know, that's how they think, right? So you can't say, do you want a $50 gift card? They're going to go, no. Because their job is to earn commissions, yeah. right? And commissions are big checks. So $1,000 is not a big price to pay. We have contests of some kind every quarter. And I have three business segments, sometimes four, depending on how you count. So all business segments are doing some type of a sales contest every quarter. And that's part of my budget, and it's worth every penny. Because that's what they respond to.
That's brilliant. That's great. I, you know, the only other thing I would say, don't boil the ocean. Everybody wants to get the new fun tool mm-hmm. and turn the whole thing on mm-hmm. and be like, look at all these cool things. Stage it. Stretch out no matter how much the company that sold you the tool wants you to implement the whole thing, tell them, no, we want to roll this out. We want to do it right. Because if everyone sees all the shiny objects, but none of it works and it doesn't get adopted, guess what? 6 months later, nobody's using it and it goes in the trash. So, but I love the bribery. That's awesome. I know we're right at time and I apologize, but again, if you have other questions, I don't know if you guys can hang around for a few minutes, but thank you so much for coming. Thanks to the panel.